You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Happy New Year! Welcome to the first show of 2023. Hopefully everybody had a great New Year's, great and fun and safe New Year's Eve last night. We're starting out the new year. Nice racing today to talk about, but we'll recap some of the stakes action from yesterday, which wrapped up 2022. We'll also maybe do a little bit of handicapping and whatnot on today's show. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us on Racing Across America on a Sunday morning. Thanks also to our friends at Gulfstream Park for their sponsorship of this and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. They'll be sponsoring throughout the championship meet, which runs through early April. Started about a week ago. Well, started earlier this week. Runs through Florida Derby weekend, which is that April 1st, April 2nd weekend. So a few more months of the championship meet ahead. And we appreciate the sponsorship from Gulfstream Park. They had a really nice stakes day yesterday. We'll recap some of those stakes. But also going back to last weekend, Monday was a nice stakes day. It was opening day out at Santa Anita, and I think I had here the stats, but they had a nice day out at Santa Anita to kick things off with a crowd of over 41,000. That's a big day. It's funny, that opening day at Santa Anita, the day after Christmas, and Del Mar opening day are some of Southern California's biggest racing days. Saratoga, opening day, everybody looks forward to it, but Travers Day at Saratoga is the big day towards the end of the meet. But out in Southern California, they like to kick things off. And Monday, opening day at Santa Anita, 41,446, actually. And they also had an opening day wagering record of over $26 million. It was also Frankie Dettori, who announced a couple of weeks ago, less than that, that 2023 will be his last year. One of the kind of riding giants on the international stage, Frankie Dettori, wrapping up the career, and he's going to kind of kick off the final year out at Santa Anita. There's Frankie at Santa Anita on Monday, where he won, I believe, three races on the day. So it was a nice kickoff to that farewell tour for Frankie Dettori. And again, he will be out at Santa Anita during this winter meet to kind of kick off the year. Be fun. Somebody mentioned it the other day. Be fun to see Frankie as part of the farewell tour come up and ride a little bit at Saratoga. We've had him at Saratoga before. We've seen the flying dismount at Saratoga. But it'd be great to see him as he is kind of wrapping up the career. But again, going back to Monday, he was out at Santa Anita. He had a good day. It was a good day for Santa Anita overall. Always like to see tracks having those kind of days because that's good for the racing industry overall. And we're going to take a look at some of that action from Monday. Not only there, but they had a nice card at Fairgrounds as well. So I just pulled up a couple of stakes at Santa Anita and one at the Fairgrounds from Monday that I thought are going to play into the next year and whatnot. And also, the first race we'll look at has potential eclipse implications as well, and that's the Malibu. And I have my eclipse PPs book PP's booklet here. Ballot due on Tuesday, I believe. And this was pretty much the only race that the book, all the voters received their information a couple of weeks ago, and the Malibu was really the only race that, was kind of playing into potentially affecting the eclipse, and it did. I don't know whether it changed voters' minds, but I think at least you had to take a second look after the Malibu. Malibu, last grade one for the three-year-olds. They're going to go 7 furlongs. We're going to watch the stretch run here. And the notable horse, of course, Taba, who was coming out of a third in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Prior to that, had won the Pennsylvania Derby. That's a grade one. Had just missed behind Cyberknife in the Haskell. 12th in the Kentucky Derby, but it also won the Santa Anita Derby. Taba's number 6 here. You can see under the venerable Mike Smith getting it done. The chart margin will wind up to be just over 4 lengths. More impressively, perhaps, it is a 106 buyer figure. So Taba, with the third in the Breeders' Cup Classic, that was a 110 buyer. The win in the Pennsylvania Derby, a 108 buyer. The Santa Anita Derby victory earlier this year, a 102 buyer figure. So he's firing the triple-digit buyers. That was the third grade one victory of the year. So again, Taba puts his hat firmly into the eclipse conversation. And just to look, I mean, it's going to come down to, realistically, Epicenter, Taba, and Modern Games. We talked a little bit yesterday on the Handicappers Report. Anthony Mormino said he would go all Modern Games. I have no argument. I think, to me, these are, you can make a pretty solid argument for any of these. You go to Epicenter, obviously the trouble and the injury in the Breeders' Cup Classic, so you kind of draw a line through that. Boy, I wish he had gotten to you know, run at full capacity there. But draw a line through that. Wins the grade one Traverse with 112 buyer. Epicenter we're talking about. Won the grade two Jim Dandy just before that, a 102 buyer. Went in a couple of the Triple Crown races, but could do no better than second in both the Derby and the Preakness. Won the Louisiana Derby and the Risen Star. So Epicenter ends the year with 4 victories and 3 seconds in 8 starts. And the victories were the Grade 2 Risen Star, the Grade 2 Louisiana Derby, the Grade 2 Jim Dandy, and the Grade 1 Traverse. Now, you compare that to Taba's record. He now has 3 Grade 1s, 4 wins in 7 starts this year, and 3 of the wins being the Grade 1 Malibu, the Grade 1 Pennsylvania Derby, and the Grade 1 Santa Anita Derby. Now, a disappointing 12th in the Kentucky Derby. The near miss in the grade one Haskell, and a third against, you know, Flightline and Olympiad in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So it's going to be interesting to see where the voters go, but there's a strong case for Taba. And as I said yesterday in the Handicappers Report, we were talking a little bit about this. Anthony Mormino said he'd go Modern Games, and it's hard to argue. Modern Games deserves to be in the conversation when you look at his two ventures to North America. September 17th, he comes over for the Woodbine Mile and gets it done pretty easily against older company. Goes back over to England and runs second in the Queen Elizabeth, a Group 1 there, and then comes back and faces, again, older in the Breeders' Cup Mile and gets it done there. So he's got 2 Grade 1 victories here in North America, both against older horses, which adds a little zest to his resume. Very interesting how this 3-year-old eclipse is going to play out. I'm going to be interested. I think I've labeled who you're going to see as the finalists, but I'll be interested to see the final voting totals as well. I tend to think it's going to go to Epicenter, but with the 3 Grade 1s, it's going to be intriguing to see how the voters play as far as Taba's concerned. But Taba, again, the victory last Monday out in Southern California, Santa Anita's opening day, the Malibu with a 106 buyer. Also wanted to take a look at the San Antonio because the notable win there for Bob Baffert with Country Grammar, who was coming out of a second-place finish in the Awesome again as the beaten favorite. He had run second in the Pacific Classic back in early September behind Flightline. He had run second in the San Diego after winning the Dubai World Cup. I wasn't quite sure what to make of him on Monday. Class of the field, certainly. But, again, 3 seconds since coming back from Dubai. But he said, yeah, not today. I'm going to get it done. And gets it done. Chart margin here is 4.5 lengths for Country Grammar in the San Antonio last Monday. And he does it with a 99 buyer, which is right in his wheelhouse. I mean, you go back, you know, the last 5 buyers he had before this, a 108, a 106, then a 99 in the San Diego, a 100 in the Pacific Classic, and a 97 in the Awesome again. So he was right in his wheelhouse, but found the right field on Monday to get back to the winner's circle. Country Grammar getting it done. And that was part of the nice day for Frankie Dettori. Going to be interesting to see. You know, he's on board for Bob Baffert. But John Velasquez is out there, too, had the good relationship with Baffert last year. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how Frankie Dettori is going to fit in that and how it's going to work out, given that he got the ride on the Baffert winner in the San Antonio. Also, as I noted on Monday, the nice stakes card at Fairgrounds. And as I said, some of the stakes on Monday will play into 2023 and the various divisions there, and always this time of year. Or now we're past this time. Yeah, happy birthday, by the way, to all the thoroughbreds who turned 2-year-olds turned 3 overnight, and all the thoroughbreds 1 year older, as they all have the calendar change being their technical birthdays. But again, going back to the end of the year, it's always interesting to see what the 2-year-olds do, anticipating moving into the 3-year-old season. And down at the Fairgrounds this past Monday, we had the Gun Runner, kind of it part of that nice 3-year-old series. This was a 2-year-old, you know, the end of the year 2-year-old racing that's going to play into that nice 3-year-old series, potentially down at the Fairgrounds in Jace's Road for Brad Cox. Nice debut winner at Ellis Park back in August. Then they got ambitious, tried the Iroquois at Churchill and wound up third there. And then they tried the Street Sense over a sloppy track and just had some trouble before the race started and just was never in that race. But rebounded very nicely on Monday down at the Fairgrounds. Jace's Road getting it done. Chart margin's going to be 5.5 lengths. 93 buyer, which again, end of the year for a 2-year-old is a pretty solid number, and it's a market improvement for Jace's Road. Owned in part by our friends at West Point Thoroughbred, so congratulations to the folks at West Point for having a nice little 2-year-old moving into the 3-year-old season now. Jace's Road getting it done in the Gun Runner, a little 2-year-old stake this past Monday down at the Fairgrounds. Talked a little bit about this yesterday. Dylan Davis winds up 2022 as the leading overall jockey on the NYRA circuit. And as I say, we had the stats early. We had the stats before Saturday racing when we talked yesterday. But the final numbers, Dylan Davis, the leading New York Racing Association rider for 2022 with 186 wins in New York throughout the year. That's his first year-long title on the circuit. His final win came on Amadeus Music in the 6th race yesterday, which turned out to be the last race of 2022. If you weren't watching yesterday, NYRA canceled after the 6th because there was a fog issue. And so Dylan Davis winds up on top. He's quoted in a Dave Grenig article, I was just riding every race hard, and I'm very grateful for me being able to accomplish this. Couldn't have done it without my agent, Mike Migliori, and everybody else behind me. Mike, I think Richie's brother, Richie's uncle, I'm not, but a part of that whole Migliori clan. Joe, of course, Richard Migliori's son, now a jockey agent as well, and also playing in the, you know, the bloodstock game a little bit also, but part of the Migliori family, Mike Migliori, the agent for Dylan Davis. And again, the agent, always a very important component for the jockeys. And so congratulations to Dylan Davis and his agent, Mike Migliori, for getting it done overall. Davis finished 11 ahead of Manny Franco for the year. He was followed by Irad Ortiz, Kendrick Carmouche, and Jose Lescano. Irad led all the winners on the circuit as far as purse money with over $17 million won. It's pretty good. Franco was second. Dylan Davis was third with purse money with over $12 million. On the trainer's side, the year-long title went to, can we guess? Chad Brown, the leading trainer on the New York circuit last year for the eighth consecutive year. He had 159 wins. Boy, you look at that. I mean, jockeys are out there punching every race. Trainers, not so much so. But Dylan Davis won the year with 186 wins, and Chad Brown wins with 159. That's not that much of a discrepancy. So just shows put a lot of horses out there, but also had a lot of success. The 159 was his personal best for a year in New York and tied Gary Contessa for the second most wins in 1 year. Contessa did it back in 2007. David Jacobson had 164 wins in 2013. That's the record for a year. But still, very nice year for Chad Brown. Congratulations to Chad and his team for the 159 wins in New York in 2022. It's interesting, the Greenwich article, you know, parses out his 159 wins, ties for second, 164, the top number from David Jacobson in 2013. But Greenwich notes that in 2013, that wasn't that long ago. 2013, in New York, there were 239 racing days as compared to 196 in 2022. It shows how much the game has changed, and a lot of tracks around the country have contracted, but that's over 40 less racing. That's pretty significant. And again, in a time period, 2013, not that long ago. Chad Brown led all the trainers in purse money with over $17 million. He finished 49 wins ahead of Todd Pletcher, who was second for the year. Linda Rice third, Rudy Rodriguez, and Christophe Clement completed the top five. As far as the owners, this is not a surprise either, given Chad Brown being the top trainer. Seth Klarman's Klarovich Stables led all the owners with 57 wins and the purse money won. Michael Dubb second, Rapoli third, Peter Brandt and Reeves. Dean Reeves had a really nice year, and his City Man won yet. We'll look at that in a few, but one down at Gulfstream yesterday. But had a great Saratoga, had a good year overall. But Seth Klarman and Klarovich Stable, the leading owner for the year in New York. And as far as the fall meet, which ended yesterday, Kendrick Carmouche, 34-31 over Dylan Davis. Kendrick Carmouche, the leader. Again, Davis and the folks we just named were the leaders for the entire year, but that fall meet that ended yesterday at Aqueduct, it was Kendrick Carmouche. Linda Rice was both the leading trainer and owner for the meet. She won 20 races as a trainer and 10 as an owner. So there are your stats. With the cancellation yesterday at Aqueduct of the last few races, that Pick Six carryover from yesterday moves to today, and as yesterday was the end of the meet, that was a mandatory pay situation. That will carry over to today. So the Pick Six resets with the carryover today and the mandatory today as well at Aqueduct. All right, let me grab my PPs here and the charts, and we'll kind of breeze through some of the action yesterday at Gulfstream Park. And then I had one I wanted to look at, too, just a horse to keep your eyes on at Oaklawn. But just, let's take a look at some of the stakes action yesterday from Gulfstream. The Sugar Swirl, as I handicapped this race, I said, Frank's Rocket, who had only one win and five starts in 2022, coming into yesterday, and that was a stake at Charlestown, $250,000 stake at Charlestown. It was a nice win. But Frank's Rocket had also run second in this race, the Sugar Swirl, last year. So going into yesterday's Sugar Swirl, I wanted to go against, but I looked at the rest of the field and I just couldn't make the case. And as we watched the stretch run, that was the right decision as Frank's Rocket gets it done, and gets it done pretty easily here. Chart Margin winds up to be over 12 lengths. The betting public was with me. Went off as the 4-5 favorite, $3.60. So Frank's Rocket getting it done. Bill Mott, Luis Saez. Mott after the race said, I you know, this is a five-year-old mayor. Well, now 6 years old, now that with the calendar's changed. And I guess they are looking at the breeding shed. But Bill Mott said, you know, we weren't quite sure whether we would race a little more into the year before making decisions and plans of, as far as breeding. But given what she did yesterday, he said after the race, maybe we'll get in another race. So looks like Frank's Rocket. Decisions to be made, but it's possible we'll see Frank's Rocket a little more on the track. And certainly that would be deserved after that was a nice win yesterday. But again, the rest of the field was, not super strong. The Rampart worked out well for me. You didn't knock it out of the park payoff-wise. But I had Mary Quite Contrary over Colorful Mischief over All Worthy, 7-4-2. And as we watch him come down the stretch, 7-4-2. Mary Quite Contrary gets it done. Fairly lightly raced three-year-old filly who came into this with four wins in five career starts. One of those was a stakes victory, but it was restricted to a Florida bred. So she stepped out and got a nice stakes victory yesterday against Open Company in only the sixth career start. Now 5-6. Pretty impressive performance here. The chart margin winds up to be over three lengths. The betting public liked her at 9-5, so $5.80. And as I say, if you're watching the show yesterday, we ran 1-2-3 with the try. And as I also said, it wasn't there wasn't a whole lot of value there. It wasn't bad. I mean, the cold exact was over $22 for 50 cents. You got about $15 on the try. So for a couple of bucks, the try was worth $60. But Mary Quite Contrary looking pretty good as she wraps up her three-year-old campaign in fine fashion. And it's just a nice little runner that maybe it'll be fun to keep our eyes on going forward and see if, she ventures. You would have to think she will venture outside of Florida in 2023, given what we've seen so far and a nice performance yesterday against Open Company. The Suwannee River also turned out nice. If you picked up the one sheet or were watching the show yesterday, Gulfstream worked out okay and gave out the, if you watched yesterday, Howard Kravitz and I, Howard Kravitz from the HHH podcast, went over the late pick five at Gulfstream. Oh, Skippy Longstockings knocked both of us out. Otherwise, we were 4-5. And it was a very haveable pick five that didn't knock it out of the park price-wise, but you could have put together a fairly reasonable ticket and wound up with, I want to say, I'll check when we get there, but over $500 for 50 cents. I had on my ticket the winner of the Suwannee River, who I had Stolen Holiday on top, and you're going to see a nice late run to get it done. Howard Kravitz like Lady Rockstar on top. Lady Rockstar is the number 10 horse. Stolen Holiday is the number 7 horse, and you can see Stolen Holiday making a really nice late run here and is just going to get it done. It's going to wind up to be a length over Lady Rockstar. Running third will be Baystorm. But as I said, for me, it was a nice way to kick off that pick five play. $13.40 on Stolen Holiday. Shug McGahee, trainee, who two starts back in the Eatontown at Monmouth. That was the race that attracted me. Had run very well. Now, had done it on the pace, on the front in the Eatontown, and you go down the page, was typically attending the pace. Now, yesterday, and Chung said, man, I was a little concerned. Yesterday, the horse got in a little bit of a jam in the race and went back and had to change up the running style. Always interesting when horses do that, because then you wonder, well, now what do they do going forward? But Shug said, yeah, usually this horse is up on the pace, went back. I was a little bit concerned, but you saw that nice late run. So the, you know, the little bit of trouble that sent this horse a little further back in the pack than you might usually see worked out very well, as it turned out, under Junior Alvarado. Again, chart margin of length. And a decent little $13.40 there. The Mr. Prospector, Sibelius was the, I want to say, morning line favorite. Yes, but the morning line favorite, but you wound up getting a little value on Sibelius. Sibelius under Junior Alvarado for Jeremiah O'Dwyer. Gets it done. I said when I was handicapping, a horse I had in my mix, and as I was handicapping during the show yesterday, looking up at the odds, wound up 8-1, 15-1 on the morning line. Dean Delivers, I thought, was getting overlooked a little bit, certainly at the 15-1 morning line. That one completes the exacta. But as I say, Sibelius, who was 3-1 on the morning line, goes off at 9-2. So you're going to have Sibelius getting it done over Dean Delivers, who I thought was an interesting a little bit of a price. Steel Sunshine, Howard Kravitz liked that one. That one is going to run third in here at 8-1. The favorite, Uncle Ernie, at 3-1 runs fourth. But with a couple of horses I thought were a little bit interesting, you wound up with a $75 exacta in here if you played around a little bit with a couple of the horses that, again, were certainly very logical. Sibelius getting it done. In the field of 11, the chart margin there was 2.25 length. So, again, nice performance from that one, who came into the race with 4 wins and 16 starts. So now 5 wins and 17 starts, had run second just prior to yesterday, close up second in a stakes race at Churchill, had never run at Gulfstream before. But you go back to the Light Diffuse at Pimlico, early in September, tossed a 106 buyer. I have not seen the buyers yet for the Gulfstream races, but certainly ran well yesterday and kind of ran back to that performance just a few months ago over at Pimlico. The Fort Lauderdale, I said earlier, Dean Reeves had a nice year. Part of that year was up at Saratoga, where he had a really, really good season. And part of that was City Man, who won the Forbidden Apple and then ran a good second in the Bernard Baruch. Those were both graded stakes races. This City Man is a New York brand. I think I saw Naj Thompson down there from the New York Breeders, based now up in Saratoga, but for a long time he worked for Naira. Now he's with the New York Breeders, and I'm pretty sure I saw him in the winner's circle. Nice support for the New York Breds for Naj, but City Man, New York Bred. So after the two nice open company stakes races, the graded stakes races at Saratoga, goes back down to Aqueduct and wins a couple of state bred stakes races. Part of, again, that nice year for Dean Reeves. A lot of that when teaming with Christoph Clement, who trains City Man. The horse to beat in here was going to be, obviously, Colonel Liam. I took a stab against. We talked about that pick five, and we said a lot of people probably going to single Colonel Liam. And I didn't have a real argument with that. 3-for-3 at Gulfstream. Came back and won the Pegasus Turf in January off a long layoff. But I looked at it as two starts this year. The Pegasus Turf, which was a nice win off a layoff, and then goes over to Dubai and kind of disappoints. Hadn't been seen since that Dubai race in March. They tried to get an allowance race week and a half or so ago down at Gulfstream. They were on the AE list, didn't get in. So now they wind up in here. And I thought, if you're taking a shot against Colonel Liam with this situation, this is probably the spot to do it. Doesn't always work. Sometimes you wind up making the decision that looks very good. And even money, Colonel Liam did disappoint yesterday, running sixth. It wasn't even really a competitive race for Colonel Liam. Colonel Liam's the number 12 horse here. If you're checking the chicklets, Todd Pletcher said they're still going to move on to Pegasus turf. But up the rail, crafty ride here from Joel Rosario. Comes up the rail, City Man gets it done. The chart margin there is 1.5. Decorated Invader runs second. Squeaks in off the AE list for our friends at West Point Thoroughbreds. So Christophe Clement Exacta and Christophe Clement commented that he was glad to see Decorated Invader get back into good form, and it was a nice performance for that one, running second. So Clement 1-2 in there. West Point Thoroughbreds, again, congratulations, a nice second. Clement was saying both of these horses now headed to the Pegasus. Dean Reeves, they interviewed him after the race, and he was looking forward to going to the Pegasus. And they said, Dean was saying, you know, we thought we got a pretty good New York bred here. Christophe Clement was quoted as saying, you know, as a New York bred, we've typically given them the winter off, and then they can aim for New York bred stakes or, you know, open stakes. But they thought, hey, let's give Florida a shot this year, and let's see, in this race, do we have a horse that we can take to the Pegasus turf? And Clement, after the race, and Dean Reeves both said, we're going, and why not off of that performance? So City Man gets it done. Again, putting a nice little exclamation point on a nice year for Dean Reeves and his outfit. Christophe Clement training, again, runs 1-2. As I said, Colonel Liam, a disappointing sixth as the even money favorite, but Todd Pletcher said, you know, it was a long layoff. Still going to go on to the Pegasus if that's, you know, if the horse is kind of indicating that will work. And so we'll see what Colonel Liam does and if able to rebound with now this little bit of a tightener under the belt. But he hadn't been seen since March, so certainly understandable. But City Man looking really good. Again, sneaking up the rail there. Nice ride from Joel Rosario to get it done in the Fort Lauderdale. And finally, on the stakes side, down, this was the our pick five ticket. Both Howard Kravitz and I, we didn't have exactly the same tickets, but we had overlapping horses. We both came into this race alive with the tickets we displayed yesterday. Howard was kind of going to go strong on O'Connor. I used O'Connor and Simplification. And I handicapped it. O'Connor on top, Simplification second, Skippy Longstockings third, but I only went too deep on the pick, so it's so frustrating. Skippy Longstockings, though, the other Safi Joseph runner, as he O'Connor, the South American transplant who looked so good in the first United States start, so he goes off at 6-5, and I think he was a single for a lot of people on the pick plays. But he just disappointed. And Safi, after the race, was kind of disappointed with O'Connor, although he said they'll go on to the Pegasus with O'Connor, and he's expecting a rebound, but now he can go on also with Skippy Longstockings. Skippy Longstockings is going to be the number 7 horse here, who showed some punch during the 3-year-old season, won the West Virginia Derby a couple of starts prior to this at Mountaineer, but he gets the jump on him. Irod Ortiz in the saddle. Simplification, the number 4 horse that I used on my ticket, was right there, and around the turn I thought was okay, but gets out-bobbed under the wire by Pioneer of Medina, who, as I said yesterday, I didn't know what to do with Pioneer of Medina, a horse I'd liked quite a bit earlier in the year, but then just didn't quite live up to that. However, came into this with a win at Churchill, so Pioneer of Medina, nice little second place finish, but clearly the horse that lived up to the expectations going in, or lived up to the challenge going in, was Skippy Longstocking, who got it done and really wasn't challenged down the stretch. Chart margin there is a couple of lengths. Skippy Longstocking, fourth career victory in the 14th start. Again, he'd won the West Virginia Derby. Third in the Wood Memorial earlier this year. Third in the Belmont Stakes. So he was one of those kind of floating, you know, second tier, maybe 3-year-olds as the season progressed. But yesterday, you know, stepping into a nice little stakes race against older, a nice little graded stakes race against older, grade three. And I'm just looking, first try against older. Pretty nice performance. I've been feeling like the three-year-old crop, last year as we made the turn from three-year-old to four-year-old, the three-year-old crop last year, getting towards the end of the year, really kind of matured and became interesting, and you felt like these guys are going to be okay as four-year-olds, and that's kind of the way it played out. This year, I'm not quite sure about the three-year-olds and how they're going to play going into the older division, but Skippy Longstocking yesterday seemed to say, wait a minute, maybe the three-year-olds will be a little more creditable than you are giving them credit for there, Mr. Merrill. So we'll see. Finally, I wanted to show one from yesterday because I was in, obviously, doing OTB Live yesterday afternoon and watching various tracks. And yesterday was a fun day. I tossed out picks on Tampa and Oakland and whatnot. But yesterday's fourth at Oakland, I think, has a two-year-old, and now again, overnight became a three-year-old to watch from Kenny McPeak. Kenny McPeak yesterday at Oaklawn, spectacular day. Four wins yesterday at Oaklawn for Ken McPeak, and two of them were stakes races. But the one of interest to me was the fourth race, maiden special event. I had Sun Thunder on top, 3-1 on the morning line. Betting public went with me, though, and made this closer to even money. We're going to pick it up coming out of the backstretch and going into the far turn. And Sun Thunder is going to be the number five horse and starts to make just a huge move. You know, when you see those moves that are backstretch, far turn moves as opposed to coming out of the turn, coming into the stretch, to me, that shows a horse with some real, real ability because that's an extended move. When you start to make the move coming out of the backstretch. So again, Big Sun Thunder is going to be the number five horse. Comes out of a career day, and you can see there on the outside, he's it with that lime cap, and it's just kind of floats right by the field. And then you think, oh, maybe it took its toll, and he's going to flatten out. No, he hits the stretch here. The chart margin winds up to be 6.5 lengths. Came out of a third-place finish in the career debut by Into Mischief. That says win early. Had a sibling that won in its lone career start. So there was some win early in the breeding. And in the second career start, again, with that big move around the far turn, to me, this was an impressive performance. And again, I haven't seen the numbers yet on any of these, but the career debut was at 7 furlongs at Churchill. This was a mile, so this was two turns down at Oaklawn. Did wind up going off, as they say, the favorite, and paid $4.20. David Cabrera on board for Ken McPeak. And I just wanted to show that race because, again, I have a feeling this might be one to watch going forward for McPeak as, again, all the two-year-olds became three-year-olds overnight, and we're now looking at those three-year-olds, and we will look at three-year-olds in just a moment. Our friend Bob Ehalt will join us. He did an analysis of the Smarty Jones, which runs today at Oaklawn and kind of kicks off points racing action for the Kentucky Derby on the three-year-old side of things, and so we'll talk a little Smarty Jones and more with Bob Ehalt after the break, so stay tuned. Racing Across America continues.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
We'll be right back. No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by our friend Bob Ehalt. As I say, I saw on America's Best Racing, he had a little preview of the Smarty Jones. And as they all became three-year-olds last night, I thought, why not kick into three-year-old Derby Trail action right here on New Year's Day? And so I reached out to Bob. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Happy New Year to you and the audience.
Same to you. Looking forward to having a little conversation about some of the three-year-old action. As I say, points race with the Smarty Jones this afternoon down at Oaklawn Park. I'll ask you generally, your take on Oaklawn, because I say it all the time. I'm in here doing the handicapping show. Oaklawn is one of my favorite tracks. I think you find a lot of value at Oaklawn, and I think over the past few years with the casino they have down there and everything, I think their product has built up nicely, but boy, I enjoy Oaklawn during the winter.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they have really good purses, they have good fields, it's just dirt racing, there's no turf racing, so you don't have to kind of mix things in. If you have a dirt horse, you don't have to worry about a card with six turf races and limited dirt opportunities. So I think trainers kind of know if you have a real good dirt horse, head to Oaklawn you could go to Oaklawn for the winter and have a pretty good chance of getting your races to fill and go. And you know, when you get the bigger fields, be it dirt or turf, you get some pretty good value with your horses. And certainly I think, you know, Oaklawn is really taking some big steps forward in the past few years, and interesting now with kind of moving where the Arkansas Derby kind of used to be the last prep. Now it's kind of in that rotation with the Florida Derby and such of having a couple more weeks.
Yeah, and the meet being extended into December and out towards Derby Day has been interesting as well. But again, I really, really enjoy Oaklawn, as I say, I think, and you alluded to it too, some nice value available there. We'll see if we can, I'm not sure if we'll find some value in the Smarty Jones, because I think we're looking at your analysis, we're kind of similar as far as the top pick. Once you get past the top pick, I think it becomes really interesting, however. But Victory Formation, 6-5 on the morning line, Brad Cox trainee. We're going to pull up a replay of the allowance optional claiming victory from November 26th. Victory Formation is going to be the number two horse in here. Gets it done. You like to see this from a two-year-old. Nice gutsy neck win in here as the favorite. So two for two so far. Luis Saez was on board the first two. Flavian Pratt will jump on board this afternoon. But it looks like it goes through Victory Formation. As I say, though, once you get past that horse, it becomes very, very interesting. Give us some thoughts on the Smarty Jones.
Victory Formation, he's a favorite. Seems like, in a sense, the most likely winner. But, you know, he is kind of risky. I mean, it's 6-5. You like him. I'm not sure about betting him. Because, you know, you're talking about a horse that really hasn't gone beyond 6.5 furlongs. What Brad Cox kind of likes to do, if he's uncertain about a horse's distance capability, he does like this, like, one-mile race that you might get at Remington, and then here in the Smarty Jones. It's a one-mile, two-turn. It kind of introduces it to two turns, and then he really could see exactly what he has of the horse. Victory Formation certainly has done nothing wrong. The times are good. He's bred by, I believe, Taprit. stake. So that kind of tells you maybe there's some distance in the pedigree. He's a logical favorite, but you know, there are reasons to think he could be beatable. I mean, maybe that final furlong catches up with him. Then, as you say, after that, it kind of boils down to three trainers in Cox, McPeak, and Steve Asmussen, each having two starters. And, you know, the question comes down to whether, you know, which one of the duos is going to do the best. I think Kenny McPeak has a couple of interesting ones. I thought, you know, Dennington, you know, was kind of hurt by a wide trip at the Kentucky Jockey Club, which, you know, it was a pretty good race. And I think that makes him a danger here. The other one for Kenny McPeak is coming off an allowance, off a third at an allowance race. Looks like he might have a good future. Cox's other horse also, Angel of Empire. You know, you can't really dismiss. You know, you'll find out about class. That horse won an allowance at Indianapolis. They could kind of jump up in class here. We'll see how he can handle it. But he certainly has the connections from Cox's barn. And especially if he's 15-1, might be interesting. You don't get too many Brad Cox horses at 15-1. And, you know, then you got the Asmussen horses who, you know, don't look as good. I mean, you know, maybe Communication Memo is a horse who won by six over the track at the distance. So you certainly have to respect him. The time wasn't great, but still, he won at the distance. The other Asmussen horse has to do a little bit of maybe step up a little bit. How did he do that? And then, as I say, then the other two are really just long shots. You got CJ Storm and Western Ghent. I mean, they just looked a little overmatched. I mean, Western Ghent is not a surprising horse. You know, D-Wade Lucas has never fazed by odds or defeat. He'll wheel his horse back if he feels they are in good shape. I mean, this horse has probably lost its last few races by close to 70 lengths. So I'm not sure if you can see him, but it is interesting. I mean, I think, you know, Victory Formation, as you mentioned, he's the logical favorite. And then, you know, I think there are two, three, four different ways or so that you could go for a second choice in the race.
Well, and you made a great point. Given the Victory Formation, 6.5 furlongs and 6 furlongs, this is the old Harvey Pack angle. Don't play a horse who's doing something for the first time. And this is a stretch out. So you can make an argument against. So the play for me is either you believe in Victory Formation and you maybe one punch figure out who to put underneath an exacto, or maybe play one of the picks. And I think if you get past Victory Formation, it could blow up a little bit, because I think a lot of people are going to be singling Victory Formation. And for me, my first thought was Communication Memo. I like the Asmussen horses automatically, and I think coming off the win, as you say, track and distance. An Angel of Empire becoming the quote-unquote other Brad Cox trainee. Those types always interest me. All of that said, after yesterday and what Kenny McPeak did, we showed earlier, I don't know if you watched the race, the fourth yesterday at Oaklawn, Sun Thunder, I think is going to turn out to be a really nice one for Kenny McPeak. But that was one of four winners for him yesterday at Oaklawn, including the two stakes. And I just think sometimes these trainers get on a roll and you have to ride the train. So now I'm taking a much closer look at it, either 10 days later or Dennington. And I may just decide on the price which one to use amongst that duo.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I mean, I think they both have things that you like and would make them want to consider. As I say, I mean, Dennington, you know he can handle the distance. He's won a mile and a 16th. I thought he had a good race in the Jockey Club, Kentucky Jockey Club. Wide trip, rallied. Maybe the mile might be a bit short for him, but he's certainly proven that, you know, he could compete in stakes company. That was a great two stakes. This is a listed $100,000 race. 10 days later, looks like a horse who could have a good future. Certainly, you know, been winning. You know, you win in you break your maiden at Keeneland, and then you come back and you run second in a allowance race at Churchill Downs. I mean, that's pretty good quality of horses. So yeah, they're both kind of even. I might give the edge to Dennington only because he does have that stakes experience. But you know, certainly they probably are going to be the second or third choices behind Victory Formation.
Yeah, I think it's, as I say, it's a fun race. Victory Formation looks definitely like the one to beat, but there is a question to be answered there. And then once you get past that one, I think it's a lot of fun. Looking forward to that. It'll go off our time at 5:10 local time at Oaklawn, 4:10 this afternoon. That's the scheduled post time for the Smarty Jones. Again, as we kick off three-year-old Derby Trail action here on New Year's Day. And speaking of the three-year-olds, Bob, top of the show, I was showing some of the stakes action from yesterday, but I also went back to Monday and showed Tabo winning the Malibu. And I pulled out, I have my little Eclipse PP booklet here, the ballot deadline coming up on Tuesday. Interested to hear your take, because I went through the three logicals, and I think on the three-year-old side, you can make a real case and a solid case for all three of them. Epicenter and now Tabo with three grade one wins, and Modern Games with the win in the Woodbine Mile and the win in the Breeders' Cup Mile against Older. I think, as I say, all three of them have a pretty strong case to be made.
Yeah, I would think so. The one that I'm just not that keen on is Modern Games. I think you have to have a real bad year to kind of look at a European turf course as your champion three-year-old. I just don't think. He ran once, in Canada, won a good race here in the United States. But, I just think when horses, when you're running in the classics, the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, the Belmont, the Travers, the Haskell, that's against real good competition. The horses have been in training since January. Yes, they're going to get a little tired at the end of the year. The European, Modern Games in my mind. I got to admit, I didn't put them on my ballot. I put Cyberknife third.
Okay.
On my ballot. I thought Cyberknife had a real good campaign. He won the Haskell. Beating Tiba. He was a very, very game horse at the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. I put him third, and I did go with Epicenter, Tiba second. It was very close. I tried to weigh the they only had one race together. Epicenter won that, so that's a point in his favor. But, I tried to line up their best races against each other and which was more impressive. And I do think there's certain things that kind of stand out. As much as Epicenter ran in the Classics, finishing second in the Derby and Preakness, I thought Tiba had some pretty good performances. Breeders' Cup Classic finishing third, narrowly losing second. In the Breeders' Cup Classic, when you have a dominant star like Flightline, that's a pretty good performance. I thought the Haskell, when he was second to Cyberknife, was maybe a better race than the Preakness, even though the Preakness has the cachet of being a Triple Crown race. I thought the Haskell field was pretty good with Jack Christopher in there and such. But when I kind of weighed it down, the complete body of work kind of favored Epicenter, because I will say a couple of the grade ones, I thought the Pennsylvania Derby was a real, probably Tiba's biggest accomplishment. Biggest accomplishment I thought for Epicenter was winning the Travers, and I thought that had an edge over the Pennsylvania Derby. And the other grade ones for Tiba, when you look at the horses that he beat, and who they became, I thought that's why I did think some of the races Tiba got beat were a little better than some of his wins. So in the end, I kind of gave a narrow edge to Epicenter. It's such a shame he got hurt in the Breeders' Cup, yeah. which means you had it tossed out. Because I do think, I really kind of looked at it that whoever finished better in the Breeders' Cup between the two of them, that might have been the deciding factor, but that got removed from the equation. So I did go with Epicenter on top of Tiba, and as I say, out of my loyalty to dirt horses at the Classics, to go with Cyberknife third.
Yeah, and you know, Al Gold, a nice supporter of the game in the New York area. It was fun to see him get Cyberknife and a, you know, a nice horse like that. And I have no arguments. I didn't mention Cyberknife earlier, but certainly yes, with the Haskell victory, and he had a very good year as well. Like you, I am leaning towards. I haven't completed my ballot yet, but I'm leaning towards Epicenter. But I did think Monday in the victory, and like you, we have to look. You can't just blindly say grade one, grade two, grade. You have to look at the fields and kind of figure that out as well. But with the victory in the Malibu, Taba, I think, probably closed the gap. I'm going to be really interested to see the final betting totals, final voting totals for that category when they come out. A couple more things I wanted to hit on. I mentioned your preview of the Smarty Jones today on America's Best Racing. Folks can find your work there, but also find your work in the Blood Horse and a couple of things you wrote about in the Blood Horse and wanted to touch on. You did a little recap of opening day at Santa Anita, and I said at the top of the show, 41,000 people. It's funny, I mentioned Saratoga. Saratoga opening day, we love it because we look forward to it so much, but it's nothing like Santa Anita the day after Christmas or Del Mar's opening day. They had 41,000 people at Del Mar, a record handle. Some nice results, including Country Grammar under Frankie Dettori, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch Frankie Dettori in Southern California this year as he kind of kicks off in America his farewell tour.
Yeah, I mean, boy, he got off to a great start with three wins, and you know he's going to be riding for some good outfits. Baffert's going to give him some horses. You know, guys like Doug O'Neill have already put him on winners. He's gonna wind up on some good horses, and you know, and he has the right attitude. I mean, he has a great personality, and you know, I from talking to him, you get this feel. This isn't, shall we say, a retirement tour per se. You know, in the sense of I'm out the door, I'm done. No, he wants to go out with a big bang, and you know, he's really putting some time and energy into this. I think he's really going to be riding in top form at Santa Anita. It's not going to be a, hey, I'm on vacation and I'll work in a few rides here or there. No, I think he's going to be, you know, I think he's going to be a, he's not going to win the riding title or anything like that because he's not going to have that many bounds. But I think certainly he's adding to what's a pretty extremely strong jockey's colony out there on the West Coast. And, you know, as I say, he just brings the charisma of being, you know, probably right now, I'd say, you know, the world's most famous jockey and probably, without question, its most accomplished active jockey. So I think that's going to add to a lot of fun in the California. They say he should have some bounce on at the Pegasus, so he's going to be planning probably to come to Gulfstream for a bit. I don't know exactly how long he'll be there, but, you know, he'll definitely be there for the weekend, you know, probably for the Saturday at least and maybe more. And then we'll see. And I actually said, I did my piece for the New York fans. I threw out to Frankie. I said, hey, would you consider riding at Saratoga? I mean, you know, you were out here at Santa Anita, would you think? And he didn't say, yes, I'm coming, but he didn't dismiss it. He said he's come to New York. He went to Belmont. He went to Aqueduct. And he said, you know, yeah, maybe Saratoga's a possibility. We'll see. So maybe in New York we'll get to see. Maybe the Naira crew could get to kind of work with Ron Anderson and see if, you know, I'm sure Godolphin will have something in one of those big turf races at Saratoga. And maybe in New York we'll get to see him before he bows out.
We keep our fingers crossed that we see the flying dismount up at Saratoga. That would be a lot of fun in the final year. And just the flip side, one last thing I wanted to touch on, because you wrote a profile on the flip side of the jockey. You know, Frankie Dettori on the way out, but on the way in, Matty Oliver, the apprentice, and we have a photo up now of the win, a couple of weeks ago for Tom Morley, her first career win. She had another win yesterday for Gary Siaka with Fenway early in the card at Aqueduct. So a couple of wins now. But she's been fun to watch. I mean, a couple of wins, but 15 seconds and or thirds, 8 seconds, 7 thirds in 38 starts. So she's off to a nice little beginning to the career. It was fun to watch after that first victory, watching the horse come into the winner's circle. She couldn't get the smile off her face, and then the camera followed her to the you know, the traditional welcome to the winners club with the jockeys with the bucket of ice water and the powder and whatnot. Although I will say they step it up at down at Aqueduct. Somebody had a hose as well. But you wrote a nice little profile on Maddie Oliver, and we were talking before he went on the air. I think she's going to be fun to watch this winter.
Yeah, she's done, you know, she kind of, I first noticed her by some of the seconds and thirds that she was popping with long shots, 50 to one shot, 30 to one shot, 50 to one shot, you know, and the odds say it all. Now, yes, sometimes when people, like maybe if that horse was 57 to one with Maddie Oliver, if Irad Ortiz was on it, it'd be 14 to one, you know, something like that. But it's still those odds say what people think of the horse and the chances. And she seemed to be outriding her odds quite a bit. And then she got, you know, she's all, again, yeah, she's only, as you say, maybe 2 for 38 or something along those lines, which isn't a great number. But she's riding some real, she's riding well, getting competitive finishes out of her horse. And certainly, I think, you know, we'll see. Certainly. You know, you have to sustain it, but the wintertime in New York, she has the 10-pound bug, I believe, until she gets 5 wins, and then she'll get to a 7-pound allowance for quite a while. So, you know, and those pounds can matter because, you know, to me, weight, it's little margins are one thing, but I think a lot of times it's the amount of lead horses are carrying, yeah. And with her horses not having as much in the saddle, you know, I think she could be effective, and we'll see. This is a time where there are going to be some other good apprentice riders coming in to try to make their name, and you know, she's going to get competition. It's not competition like Irad and Jose Ortiz and you know, Johnny V, but, you know, it'll be fun to watch, you know, to see if she can keep going. She's got a good agent in Joe Migliori, who I think will hustle and get her some decent bouts. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what she develops into.
Yeah, looking forward to it. You know, being a turf writer, you're in the same camp that I am, I think. I like the stories behind the races as well as the races, and I think she'll be a fun story to kind of watch this winter. Bob, as always, appreciate the conversation. We will talk again in the future. And, again, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you and yours, Seth. Take care.
Appreciate it. Bob Ehalt. Again, you can find his full preview of the Smarty Jones at America's Best Racing. You can find a couple of the other articles we just talked about over at the Blood Horse and more, so check that out. I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Don't forget, we are being sponsored by Gulfstream Park during their championship meet, which we appreciate. They're sponsoring some of the programming and events here at Capital OTB during the championship meet, which goes now through the early part of April. So, once again, thank you to Gulfstream. Coming up in about less than an hour or so, should kick off OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. And we'll look at some Gulfstream. We'll look at some Aqueduct and may pull in a little Oaklawn as well. All of that coming up, as I say, probably less than an hour. I'm looking up at my floating monitor up there. They're kicking off the Naira pregame show, so we'll send it down. Don't forget, with Aqueduct being canceled at the end of the program yesterday, that means that pick six carries over to today with a mandatory pay. So keep that in mind down at Aqueduct. But I'm Seth Merrill. This has been Racing Across America. We'll see you in a little while for OTB Live. Stay tuned.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.